Vlad was beginning his series of explanations of the Lord's presence within the cosmos, his personal presence within the cosmos, and Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, the non-difference of all things that are manifested with the personality of Godhead. Well, there's one absolute truth, and that's you, Lord Srinidhi. So he's going to take that explanation and go back and forth between illusion and truth, and how persons in illusion see, how persons who are conscious of the absolute truth see. Prahlad is speaking from the topmost platform. We have these three stages of, it's like, you know, getting an opportunity to hear the preaching of an Uttama Adhikari. Uttama Adhikaris don't usually make, well, but the characteristic of the Uttama Adhikari is that the Uttama Adhikari sees all living entities as spirit sparks, one with the Lord, and that they're engaged in his service. And although not favorably, but they're engaged in the service through the agency of his external energy. So, he's seeing like that, but he's, now he's preaching. Anyway, so it's a very special opportunity. See the internal consciousness of such a personality. My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is text 31. The entire cosmic manifestation is caused by you, and the cosmic manifestation is an effect of your energy. Same, he's taking the idea that he expressed before of how to understand that you are present everywhere. He gave two examples. He gave the seed and the tree. So when the seed fructifies, where is the seed? Well, there it is. It's the big tree now. But the seed itself is no gone. It's just in a different state. So the seed has become the tree. So Krishna expands his energies and becomes the cosmic manifestation. Now, where is Krishna? Well, Krishna certainly still exists, but all we can see is the cosmic manifestation. Then we can see the cosmic manifestation as a representation of Krishna. But actually, even more so, Krishna exists within every atom of the cosmic manifestation. The subtle cause exists even in material things like the seed and the tree. The effect exists or rests upon the cause. And in this case, the subtle cause exists within the gross effect and simultaneously maintains an external aloof position and identity. So the cosmic manifestation is caused by you, and it's the effect of your energy. Though the entire cosmos is but you alone, you keep yourself aloof from it. The concept of mine and yours, or it's I and mine, normally it's, in this case it's mine and yours, a duality within illusion. is certainly a type of illusion, because everything is an emanation from you, and therefore is not different from you, and the annihilation is also caused by you. This relationship between your lordship and the cosmos, oh, here it is illustrated by the example of the seed and the tree. There it is. And or the subtle cause and the gross manifestation. Oh, my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, after the annihilation, the creative energy is kept by you. You appear to sleep with half open eyes. Actually, however, you do not sleep like an ordinary human being, for you are always in a transcendental stage beyond the creation of the material world, and you always feel transcendental bliss. In Brahma Samhita, this yoga nidra of Lord Vishnu, Karana Dakshayi Vishnu, Mahavishnu, is described that actually what he's doing is his pastimes with his consort Ramadevi. So Ramadevi is used in Brahma Samhita. That's the name of his consort, like Lakshmi or Sita or Radha or each of the forms of the Lord. In the case of Mahavishnu, his consort's name is Ramadevi. So Ramadevi is not visible, not at his feet, as Lakshmi is at the feet of Narayan and Vaikuntha, but rather she is in this yoga nidra condition. Her personal presence is manifest within, and he's enjoying pastimes with her within. And so therefore it appears that he's sleeping nidra, but it's yoga nidra. So he's enjoying blissful pastimes in all circumstances. And as such, he's not touching material objects. Although you appear to sleep, the sleeping is distinct from ignorance. So now he's going to, in this section, he's describing the process of creation. He's describing the relationship of the energies and then the unfolding of those energies, specifically in terms of the personality of Godhead and the Purusha avatars, Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and from Garbhodakshay Vishnu, Brahma, and then what Brahma does. He's describing Sarga, the preliminary creation, what the Lord directly does in terms of the cosmic manifestation through the agency of the Purusha avatars. This cosmic manifestation, the material world, is also your body. And that's the theme of the chapter, or the theme of this little section. The oneness relationship of things to the Supreme. This total lump of matter is agitated by your potent energy known as Kala Shakti. And thus the three modes of material nature are manifested. Right, we know this from Brahma Samhita. That energy, Ramadevi, his pleasure potency, has a reflected portion which lies outside as the pradhan. That's what the pradhan is. It's a reflection. What later becomes the inferior energy or material energy. The terminology is changed because of the state. Pradhan is the dormant, unmanifest state. Then agitated by the glance of the Supreme Lord, which means living entities, and the time factor, then pradhan transforms to Mahatattva. Mahatattva means, the difference between the two, is the time factor. And the time factor agitates the whole soup, the primordial soup. And the ingredients start to separate out. You get alphabets instead of just primordial soup, alphabet soup. Different components and the modes of nature, and the modes of nature being agitated in the presence of the living entity. When the living entity is in contact with the mode of passion, that's when activity begins. The material activity. The soul is always active, but material activity begins in contact with the modes of passion, and then later ignorance. And the ingredients are there to supply the body through which the agitated living entity can act. Very practical system. Very nice design. You awaken from the bed of Shesha, Ananta, and from your navel. So now it's just gone from Garbhodaksha, from Mahavishnu to Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. I didn't say, and Mahavishnu, as Mahavishnu, you expand yourself within each and every one of the universes that emanate from the pores of your skin. He didn't say that. But it's the same personality. Garbhodakshaya Vishnu and Mahavishnu are the same personality. The difference is a difference of function. And according to function, a different name is given. Just like Bakanchor. That's also Krishna. But it's Krishna doing a particular activity. So, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is one of the Purusha avatars performing a specific activity. Same personality. One entity, differently expanded. So you awaken from the bed of Shesha, Ananta, and from your navel, so that the sleeping, the yoga nidra pastime, you awaken from that and expand yourself within each of the universes that have expanded from you, and you enter in as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and from your navel a small transcendental seed, not a material seed, a transcendental seed is generated. It is from this seed that the lotus flower of the gigantic universe is manifested, exactly as a banyan tree grows from a small seed. So it must have been a big lotus flower, because banyan tree, making that comparison, banyan trees are big in comparison to the seed of the banyan tree. So big lotus, so such a big lotus flower that Brahma has stated the next verse. But Brahma traveled for 100 years looking for the limit or the extent of the stem. They couldn't find it. Big lotus flower. From that great lotus flower, Brahma was generated. But Brahma certainly could not. Excuse me. He could see nothing but the lotus. Therefore, thinking you to be outside, Brahma dove into the water and attempted to find the source of the lotus for 100 years. He could not find. However, when a seed fructifies, the original seed cannot be seen. Not only the original seed cannot be seen, but in this case, where the seed is root, where the lotus is rooted, he could not find, because he's in the material position, and by the empiric process, you can't find Lord Vishnu. So he did his austerities, and then he could see that the cause of all causes, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was spread throughout his own body and senses just as aroma, although very subtle, is perceived in the earth. Now that example, he's describing Brahma's realization, which is something that he also realizes. And the realization is, just as if you were to examine the earth, although in a very subtle state, aroma exists. That is the manifestation of all aromas. As Krishna says, I'm the original fragrance of the earth. So, dig up the earth and see if you can find by chemical analysis or any other way you want to analyze, see if you can find the various scents of the various flowers of this earth. Will you find it? No, you will not find it. So, where do trees get the scent from? The answer that Prabhupada has given is that, therefore, every living entity has mystic powers. He gives the example of the cow. Analyze in what goes into the cow and see what comes out of the cow if it's the same. Analyze the milk of a cow and you'll find various vitamins and calcium. And analyze the grass and see if you'll find all those things. So if it's not going in but it's coming out, how's it happening? So the cow has some mystic potency. But also with this explanation, it's there in a very subtle state. And somehow, that living entity that has the body of the cow, or another example that Prabhupada gives is the citric acid found in a lemon tree. I had the good fortune of seeing a lime tree in someone's backyard in California. And I was astonished at how many limes grow from that little scrawny tree. And when I looked at the lime tree, I was thinking of what Prabhupada had said. Dig up the earth and analyze. Where's the citric acid? I take all the limes that come off the tree that are produced every year and gather up all the citric acid. Where's the citric acid coming from? And it does it every year. So, once again, the understanding that this verse is saying is, although in a very subtle state, the aromas, the citric acid, the vitamins and calcium, and whatever else is produced by things that take their sustenance from the earth, they have the ability to draw from that existence, that subtle existence, the grosser manifestation of that existence, which is exactly what he said earlier. The subtle produces the gross manifestation. So Krishna produces that which he's the subtle that produces the subtle manifestation. The subtle aromas, the subtle vitamins and calcium, the subtle citric acids, and the subtle everythings, and then the grosser manifestations, which are then made manifest in some other, they make manifest the aromas and the fragrances and it's Krishna's system. And he's present personally throughout that whole system in a subtle manner, just like aromas are present in a subtle manner within the earth. He present. He's subtle in that we can't detect his personal presence. But nonetheless, Prahlad is saying, you are personally present. And Brahma realized it through this extent of his austerities. He realized that within his limbs, within his senses, you're there. Supreme personality of Godhead is spread throughout. Sarvam Kalidam Brahma. He had that realization. Of course, Lord Brahma is standing right there. He's hearing all of this. Then, not only, so there's the oneness aspect, but then the next shloka is the difference aspect. Brahma could also see you personally as Shirodakshay Vishnu. He doesn't give the name Shirodakshay Vishnu. He gives the what's found within the Upanishads. He saw you possessing thousands and thousands of faces, feet, and heads, and hands and thighs and noses and ears and eyes. And he was very nicely dressed. Now that, how do you put those two things together? It would seem like thousands and thousands of faces and noses and eyes, and that'd be pretty, it's like a freak show. But the meaning is, not discussed here, meaning is he saw the various manifestations of Shirodakshay Vishnu. And how many heads are there? You could also say one, but you could also say thousands and thousands. Sahasrirsha Purusha Sahasraksha Sahasrapat from Purusha Sukta and from many places in the Vedic statements. This is describing the Purusha avatar, the object of realization in Purusha Sukta, the object of realization of the Lord of this universe directly. But, so in the Lord of this universe, the Purusha avatars, they are but expansions of Sankarshan, of the second quadruple expansion. Who is in the second quadruple expansion there but manifestations of Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha? And therefore it can also be an indirect way of describing Lord Narayan. And of those from the Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, the various avatars in this world, like Lord Shringadeva, make their appearance. But that Lord Nisringadeva, who makes his appearance through Garbhodakshay Vishnu, has his own abode in Vaikuntha. It's just like saying somebody may make their appearance by walking through the door. But it's not that the door gave birth to the person. Rather, they existed on the other side of the door. They appeared through the door. So Lord Nisringadeva has his existence in Vaikuntha, and he may appear as an avatar of Garbhodakshay Vishnu by appearing through that agency. Anyway, Lord Brahma, in addition to his realization of the oneness feature of the cosmic manifestation with the Lord and the Lord's personal presence everywhere in it, he also realized the Lord has his own abode, his own form, very nicely dressed, wonderful ornaments and weapons. Seeing you in the form of Lord Vishnu, your symptoms and form being transcendental, your legs extending from the lower planets, Brahma achieved transcendental bliss. In other words, he was ecstatic. seeing this. And at the same time, very important for devotional service, that we recognize the Supreme Lord and also the manifestations from Him having their feature of oneness in relationship with Him. Otherwise, you can't legitimately render devotional service in this world. Is that clear? If these objects are not connected to the Supreme Lord, then you have to be an impersonalist and say it's a no-no. You can't have anything to do with any of these things but this Maya. All you can have something to do with is Brahman. But what we're hearing in Srimad Bhagavatam is the philosophical background that not only justifies bhakti yoga, but mandates bhakti yoga. Because the Supreme Lord also exists in all these things. And one will not get that realization if you neglect devotion. If you neglect the linking process of bhakti, you will not get that realization. And therefore, it's a no-no. Like Prabhupada gives the example, he said he personally saw this when apparently one of the yogis or one of the sadhus that came to his father's home and some donation was offered. And the man was seated, and Prabhupada said automatically, without even thinking, the man's hand went behind his back. Just like, no, I can't accept silver or gold or money or something of value, of monetary value. No. But the Vaishnav, Prabhupada, and everybody laughed, said the Vaishnav's hand would immediately extend. Not for himself, but accepting this should be used in Krishna's service. Recognizing it, Krishna is there, and it's meant to be used in Krishna, this energy is meant to be used in Krishna's service. So we can say yes to engaging this table, engaging the microphone, engaging this technology stuff back here, and what you do at your office, and all those other things. But when you do that, there should be the understanding that Prahlad is offering here. Now, theoretically, we can have that understanding because we just have some faith and submission to Vedic authority. But if we take up the realization process, purification process, and realization process, then if we're very fortunate, then like Brahma came to realize, we can also come to realize. At least we can know on the strength of Vedic authority it is so. At least in our beginning stages, by acceptance of that authority. But we should want to further that. That is, by acceptance of the means of purification, we can realize it as Brahma realized it. And as Prahlad realized it. And achieve transcendental bliss. Now he's going to go on and give another example of another incarnation. The example is Hayagriva. So the purposes of the Lord's incarnation is protection and extension of mercy. So you who have your own separate existence, yet your existence is inseparable, the cosmic manifestation's existence is inseparable from you. You sometimes appear in this which you are apart from, but it doesn't exist apart from you. You manifest here. Why? Mercy and protection. So the example that he gives is when the Vedas were being stolen by Madhu and Kaitava. Now it's not like Brahma had a Bhagavatam set on his bookshelf. And Madhu and Kaitava were waiting till he was asleep, and they tiptoed in and grabbed the Bhagavatam set and were running out the door. Stealing the Vedas meant that, as in a subtle way, Brahma was breathing. And as he was breathing, the Vedas were manifest. And in that subtle form, they somehow captured that subtle form of the Vedas and were running away with it. They stole it. For whatever their nefarious, mischievous purposes might have been. And when knowledge of the Vedas are in the hands of mischievous people, they make havoc. And so, Hayagriva, the horse incarnation of the Lord, appeared. It doesn't describe, I've never heard a description of how a horse killed Madhu and Kaitava, but he did. And then he returned the Vedas to Brahma. So we have our grosser medical set. In this, our case, would be someone stole your Bhagavatam set, or the original manuscript, or the, now it's probably a digital library somewhere, archives. Someone stole the archives. Anyway, he appeared to protect the Vedas and to show his mercy upon Lord Brahma. For this reason, all the great saints accept your forms as transcendental, untinged by material qualities. In this way, my Lord, you appear in various incarnations as a human being, an animal, great saint, demigod, fish, tortoise, thus maintaining the entire creation in different planetary systems and killing the demoniac principles. According to the age, O my Lord, you protect the principles of religion. Then an important statement. In the age of Kali, however, you do not assert yourself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore you are known as Triyuga, or the Lord who appears in three yugas. You've heard this before? Have you ever wondered why Triyuga? I mean, even alone, that there are four yugas. This idea is discussed in Chaitanya Charitamrita in the discussion between the two brothers, Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya and Gopinathacharya, where Gopinathacharya is asserting that Lord Chaitanya is the personality of Godhead, and Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya says, "My dear brother, why are you speaking like this? Do you not know that the Lord is known as Triyuga? There is no appearance of the Lord in this Kali Yuga." You know that discussion? No? Gopinath gives a very nice answer. He refers to this verse. In the age of Kali, the Supreme Lord does not appear manifesting himself as the personality of Godhead overtly. Rather, he manifests himself as a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his role as a devotee who is spreading the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's covered. The answer that he gives is, I'll look it up just to make sure. But the answer to Gopinathacharya includes this sloka. So, of course, in the purport, Prabhupada just focuses on who is Lord Chaitanya. So, in the purport, Prabhupada says, Hayagriva came to maintain Lord Brahma from the attack of Madhu and Kaitava. and he appeared as Lord Nrisimhadev to protect Prahlad from the demoniac father, Aranyakashipu. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya appears in the age of Kali when everyone is attacked by the demoniac principles and degrading qualities of this age. And those who take shelter of him, as Prahlad is taking shelter of Lord Nrisimhadev, will be protected from the onslaught of the influences of the age of Kali. Taking up the Sankirtan movement process of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is for that purpose. My dear Lord of the Vaikuntha planets. Now he's invoking specifically the understanding of, although you're here, you're there. You're of the transcendental realm, although you're standing before me here in the palace of Indra. Where there is knowing, in my dear Lord of the Vaikuntha planets, where there is no anxiety, my mind is extremely sinful and lusty, being sometimes so-called happy and sometimes so-called distressed. My mind is full of lamentation and fear, and it always in topics concerning you. I am therefore the most fallen and poor, in such a low status of life. How shall I be able to discuss your activities? Again, humility. How do you maintain that state of humility? Because he's just gotten through explaining some very, very intricate and very, very elevated subject matter. One might think, he might very easily, like anyone of us, might do, become proud of just how much he knows. Just a point. And not only knows it theoretically, but he's realized it thoroughly. And here he is, he's able to pacify Lord Nrisimhadev, whereas all those superior and exalted souls have been unable to do that. He's a whiz kid. But those accomplishments are possible only because of that humility. So therefore, it's a fundamental, like this point we were discussing yesterday, or touching on yesterday, it's a character trait. It's not an affectation. He's not putting it on and then he takes it off. It's within the core character of somebody like Prahlad, that he sees himself in a humble way, and he has feelings of humility. It's not a problem to maintain that humility, because it's just what his character is. It's something that helps support that quality of humility is the mood of service. One enhances the other. Because you'll see that as very, very visibly as the chapter concludes. What's he going to do with all this knowledge? Are you just going to spend the rest of his time speaking this high philosophy and it's time to go to sleep? What's he going to do? practically. What he wants to do practically is see to the deliverance of all living entities. That gives you a lot to do. But from the position, from this same position of humility, not from the same position of, here I come, the deliverer, I'll take care of you. From a humble, in the position, in a mood of service, depending entirely at each step and at each statement upon the Supreme Lord. My dear Lord, O infallible one, my position is like that of a person who has many wives, all trying to attract him in their own way. For example, the tongue is attracted to palatable dishes, the genitals to sex with an attractive woman, and the sense of touch to contact with soft things. The belly, although filled, still wants to eat more. And the ear, not attempting to hear about you, is generally attracted to cinema songs in Satya Yuga. The sense of smell is attracted to yet another side. The restless eyes are attracted to scenes of sense gratification, etc. In this way, I am certainly embarrassed. Humility. And with a nice philosophical understanding of senses that are out of control. Because there's always demands being made upon the senses by material energy. And persons that are expert in marketing, their whole field is how to agitate the senses so that in that agitated state, when the suggestion is made, if you want to be happy, take this product. Then the person will say, yes, I need that product in order to be happy, because right now my senses are just agitated. It's so transparent. But people go for it. Like this. It started in America, but now it's here in India, and below the cigarette commercials, big bold letters. Cigarette smoking is very dangerous to your health. And in America, they put the details of what can happen, what are the dangers for cigarette smokers. And yet, the big billboard shows, you know, somebody having a great time. Especially sensually suggestive things. Smoke a cigarette and you'll have pleasure. By the way, it will kill you. And yet, it works. It sells the product. I didn't follow this so closely, but in America, they've had huge lawsuits in the federal courts with the tobacco companies. When somebody disclosed that in the factories that made the cigarettes, they put additives in with the cigarettes that made cigarette smoking addictive. In addition to nicotine, they added some other things. And when that became disclosed, then they had to pay big fines. And then it this whole avalanche of, at the same time, the American Medical Association was coming out with 15-year studies that showed how cigarette smoking causes so many diseases. And it turns out that the tobacco companies knew that, but they weren't disclosing that to the public. So then that's where they're being sued for, not disclosure. And then it snowballed, and the advertising department was disclosing that they would target certain audiences, like they would have animals, like camel. So this became a very popular thing in America, the cartoon-looking camel. And their target audience was teenagers. They wanted to sell cigarettes to teenagers, so they had a camel smoking a cigarette, doing real cool things that kids would really like to do. And so they were making billions and billions and billions of dollars off of teenagers knowing we're putting additives in this stuff and we're killing the kids, but that's okay because we're making a lot of money. I think the law in America now is that they had to pay huge fines that went into a total propaganda campaign against cigarette smoking and how it can wreck people and wreck health. And so now they sell it on the internet. You can't advertise. They can't advertise. They can't, no billboards, nothing in magazines. There are laws against it. So they don't do it that way. Now they're looking for markets in Russia, huge Europe, India. That's why there's... But the same deal. Enjoy, become happy, take this product. Anyway, little tidbit about the cheating game of sense gratification. So the materialists, they know these things too. That's my little commentary here. They know these things and they exploit these things. So Prahlada is saying, I'm in the exploited and embarrassed because of it position. So as far as offering all of these prayers to you and pacifying you and pleasing you, I really don't have the qualification. But once again, he's already glorified bhakti as the only means to attract and satisfy you. My dear Lord, you are always transcendentally situated on the other side of the river of death. But because of the reactions of our own activities, we are suffering on this side. Indeed, we have fallen into this river and are repeatedly suffering the pains of birth and death and eating horrible things. Now, kindly look upon us, plural. This is the compassion of Prahlad. He's not thinking, save me, save me. He's thinking, uplift us, those of us who are in this unfortunate condition. By your causeless mercy and compassion, deliver us and maintain us. So, is it, the answer to the question is yes, but is it legitimate to ask the Lord for something? And the answer is yes. In fact, it's a very common feature of prayer that there is some supplication, some request. But like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Shikshastakam, he's already giving his Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundrim list. Don't want any of these. I don't want something material. But wanting, so having a spiritual desire, that's good. Requesting of the Lord something in the realm of pure devotion, that's good. is that selfish? I want. It's if it's in the realm of devotional service, it's not for me. I want. Because wanting or desire, as the Prabhupada's expression, is a concomitant factor of the soul. So wanting something is not to be made zero. But wanting in relation to the Supreme Lord, that's our natural life. So wanting the Lord's protection, that's spiritual. Now protection doesn't mean protect me such that, like Aranyakashipu, I will not be killed by anybody. I'll be invincible. I can do any nasty old thing to anybody. Nobody can get back me because I'm invincible. I got this benediction that I can't be killed. Not protection of that kind, but protection from anything outside of rendering or acting within my loving relationship with the Supreme Lord. That means to be kept very securely within the realm of devotional service. Staying always connected to the Supreme Lord. So praying for that spiritual connection. That's good. And the part that Prabhupada is amplifying in his commentary is this feature of compassion. Prahlad has it, and we should learn from Prahlad how to get it, or just appreciate Prahlad very deeply and we'll get it. Because Prahlad's concern, he says it explicitly, I don't want to go back home to God, back to Godhead, alone. Not that he's worried about being lonely or something. It's this feature of compassion. It's like the feature of, there's no way, it's unthinkable to leave the association of Narada. It's unthinkable thought. Because Narada is such a merciful person. He's uplifted me from my demoniac condition. He's given me everything, including your mercy. It's Narada's gift to me. How can I think of abandoning him? I guess it's horrible. I can't think of such a thought. And similarly, just being concerned about my own upliftment and salvation. It's an unthinkable thought for a Vaishnava like Prahlad. Because Prahlad cares. Not because he's supposed to care, he cares. He has great compassion. Care and compassion for one who has the quality of consciousness that Prahlad has. When he sees persons in their material condition of life, it pains him very much. He cares. Coming up in text 45, where text 43. So we're on 42, and text 43. He uses the term vimudhan. Maya sukhaya param udvahato vimudhan. He's seeing the people that cannot recognize your existence. He uses the word vimudhan, and it sounds like, why would a saintly person call somebody a fool and a rascal, like Prabhupada regularly would do? Why is he speaking? People ask. I've had many people ask, why does Swamiji speak so harshly about it? It's in that You're Ever Well Wisher, that scene in the Prabhupada's garden in Los Angeles, and there's many professors seated, Prabhupada's on a higher seat, and Swamiji, why do you use this term rascal? Maybe someone who is foolish or someone who is ignorant. Prabhupada smiles. Sum total of all ignorance. But from Prahlad's side, what follows, it's, let's say this properly, tied, tandem with this recognition of what their condition is. His compassion for that condition. It's not he's looking down his nose and saying, oh, they're so foolish. Not me. But he's greatly compassionate because of that greatly mistaken understanding and way of life, which they're subjected to because it's just like his classmates. His classmates were sons of the Asuras. So by Prahlad's association, they became free from that Asuric tendency. So Prabhupada also said, in society, people in general, they're innocent. Because the leadership of society is bad or is unqualified, but nonetheless leading. Therefore, they mislead. And basically, innocent people become corrupted or victimized by the features of Kali. Therefore, the need of first-class men in society. Therefore, the need for some persons to not be Vimudan and to be Prahlads. And recognizing the condition, be compassionate. Do something. That's Prahlad. He's going to you're doing the best thing that you can do. He's going to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and saying, with pleading in his heart, please help these people. And I'm one of them. Please help me. Keep in fixed in the linking stage of bhakti. Back to this purport, Prabhupada is giving very, very strong mandate to those who are his followers, that's every one of us, to take up this order that Mahaprabhu has given, that Prahlad is indicating, but Mahaprabhu is explicitly giving. Yaridaho Tarikaho Krishna Upadesh, that wherever you go, whomever you meet, speak something, Krishna, Upadesh. Speak something about Krishna. Tell them something. Utter Krishna's name. Somehow awaken consciousness of Krishna. Just thinking about the person at the immigration counter when I came through. I forgot to put my hat on. And the guy picked up right away, came right over, the head guy came right over and looked at the form that I had filled out. Bow wow, bow wow, rub, 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 rub. He said it in his language, but that's what he was saying. So the lady at the counter looked at my form and said, what religion are you with? I thought, uh-oh, they might send me back. I might not get entry. Because one of the questions on the form is, have you ever been refused entry? No. What religion are you with? I said, Hindu. She said, yes, and what organization? I made like I didn't understand. She asked 3 times. I didn't answer. There's my Sikha. I didn't have Tilak on. When I left Delhi, I was going through, you know, going through the security thing. Hare Ram, Hare Krishna. I'm disguised, come on. Also didn't have a hat on. I think I'm going to have to wear that silly hat all the time. But they were definitely thinking, oh, Krishna. Hare Krishnas are coming. Passed me through. I thought I wasn't going to make it. But if they knew what I'm doing right now, I guess it would be okay, because it's not. I'm just speaking amongst all of you who are persons who I already know. But this message is to take that understanding and go beyond persons that you already know. Charity begins at home, but charity also includes giving charitably to others. And I was describing to you the system of going to people's homes that you meet that may be a little favorable and having prasadam with them, or inviting them to your home, and just on a one-to-one basis befriending them, and very, very nice system. It's not loud, it's not going to draw a lot of attention, but it will be a quality way of helping through establishing a friendship with people where the ideas that they have and doubts that they have can be brought up and dealt with in a very friendly and civilized way. And if they do show some signs of making some progress, to go another step forward with them. And the system is a very nice system. I'd like to encourage that system. And certainly Prabhupada, on an international scale and a big scale, you're working within a system that has its restraints, constraints. But to do that in principle is very good. Giving Krishna Katha and Krishna Conscious association and opportunity to others, a civilized person has to do that. Finding a medium to do that that works for your local time, place, circumstance, obviously that has to happen. If all of you every Saturday afternoon went down in the marketplace and a big Harinam Kirtan, I don't know if that would work here in Singapore. Fine. Just a group of students. But anyways, this other system is a very, very practical one. Please follow up on it. Read some of these pages from the Bhagavatam before you go. Get really inspired. In text 42, O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, original spiritual master of the entire world. As you know, in in Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna addresses Krishna by a particular name, or Krishna addresses Arjuna by a particular name, it's invoking a certain aspect of the Supreme Lord. Or Krishna is indicating that Arjuna should be strong in this particular area where he does have some strength, but it seems like he's gotten a little shaky. So, the supreme, original spiritual master of the entire world, the Lord is the original spiritual master, and the spiritual master has the function of serving the Supreme Lord in a particular capacity. particular capacity is distributing the mercy of the Lord. So here he's invoking the Lord to be merciful upon all in delivering them. And his position as the original spiritual master of the whole universe. What is the difficulty for you who manage the affairs of the whole universe in delivering the fallen souls engaged in your devotional service? You are the friend of all suffering humanity. And for great personalities, it is necessary to show mercy to the foolish. The foolish. The mudhan. That's a difficult thing. Because to be with the mudhans, with fools and rascals, you want to just stay away from people like that. But it's necessary, because the idea of it's necessary is, who's going to deal with them? Another fool and rascal dealing with what's going to happen. What are the two fools and two persons who are foolish going to do together? They'll do something doubly foolish. So within society, it's necessary to have persons become relieved of that foolish position and then to deal with others in that situation. Therefore, I think that you will show your causeless mercy to persons like us who engage in your service. And again, a whole purport about inspiring preaching. The original spiritual master of the universe, supreme personality of Godhead, is merciful and is compassionate and can deliver, and if one invokes through the rendering of devotional service, it's not that we have to pray to the Supreme Lord because, as Prahlad is doing, because I and others are your devotees, please be merciful and deliver us. And only if we make such a prayer will the Lord deliver us. It's through the medium of devotional service that we are delivered. Still, the prayer is there because it maintains that sense of dependence and the opening of one's heart to the Supreme Lord in that capacity of the deliverer. In other words, prayer is good for the person who's offering the prayer. It's restating, or it's articulating that which is the dynamic of that relationship between the worshipper and the worshipful. Krishna doesn't, this is the idea, Krishna doesn't need our prayers. We need the prayers. We need the purification. Now, in the next, he said previously that he was afraid of material existence because he was born in a demoniac family and had demoniac blood and had no qualifications, and therefore I'm afraid of material existence, and therefore I'm taking shelter of you. Now he's going to say, I'm not afraid of material existence. Because wherever I stay, I'm fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, society, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them. So, it's over. Prabhupada writes, previous purport, a Vaishnava is always afraid of the abominable condition of material life, and to free himself from such horrible conditions, he engages himself in devotional service. So when, as long as I maintain myself in devotional service, then there is the fearful condition is no longer there. But if I deviate from devotional service, that's fearful. What lies outside the realm of bhakti is a fearful condition of life. So that's these two different things. Fearful, not fearful. Then it's also the two of he's happy, not happy. God is happy because of that devotional service. But within the realm of devotional service, seeing and experiencing what he's seeing and experiencing, he's unhappy to see the suffering of others. Para dukkha dukkhi. Kripam bhuti. It's an ocean of mercy seeing the suffering of others. It's just, it's what's expected. Amplify things a little bit and say, in the category of a saint, what saint, when we think of a saint, do we not think of someone who's very, very compassionate? Naturally we think like that. So, what is that's expected? What's a saint that's callous? That there's no such thing. Not saintliness to be callous. I don't care. Let them rot. So it built similarly, built within the teachings of those who are being instructed in the ways of spiritual life, must be acting compassionately. And then what's a practical medium of expression for that compassion? Here Prahlad is giving that to us. In our own approach to devotional service, in trying to please the Supreme Lord by our activity, Guru and Krishna by our activity, and here he's being addressed as the original spiritual master of the whole universe. There's the channel of that that's being recommended for that concern of compassion to go is for the ultimate deliverance of the soul from the foolish condition the soul is within. Like a lot of the world's attention has gone to the disastrous results of the earthquake in Gujarat. But what's to say that those persons who are remaining and get the attention that they need, medical and just, you know, human needs after their families have been devastated and whole lives have been, material lives have been crumbled by the earthquake, it won't have, some other calamities will not follow in the course of this life and next lives and so on. It's what's pitiable is the whole condition of material existence. What's the solution to that problem? Not that nothing should be done on the temporal level, but ministering unto things on the temporal level must be accompanied by ministering to things on the transcendental level. Or, like, aside from earthquake disasters, just education. Some of you will be involved in, perhaps, in some teaching position. So, obviously, this is built into the training that you're receiving, but not just that you have an occupation so that people can get some material knowledge and you'll get some pay for that offering of that material knowledge and you'll have a reasonable economic life and a life of respectability. But obviously somehow providing spiritual understanding within the dynamic of that relationship or the situation of being a teacher per se within society. Delivering transcendental understanding and having, like Prahlad, a great compassion of, and concern that happens with very intense feelings, praying to the Supreme Lord for that opportunity for him to be very merciful and pick all of us up to that transcendental realm where your devotional, where your lotus feet are there and the devotional service to you is being rendered all the time. You're on the other side of this material existence, and we're struggling on this side. Please compassionately take us up. Speaks about processes of liberation where persons that are not devotees may also be concerned with some of the same things that we're speaking about, or Prahlad is speaking about, where they go away from the rest of society and through different processes try to achieve their own deliverance. But Prahlad says, as for myself, I don't want that. I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. Again, same term, but he's not saying fools and rascals like yik. He's saying with a mood of compassion. They're in that position because they're misled, misguided, and unfortunate. Basically good, but not presently of good quality. I don't want to be liberated leaving behind these persons. I don't want these processes that bring that about. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. So there's Sanskrit for that. Nanyam tvad asya sharanam brahmato anupashye. The Prabhupada quotes this phrase in the next five purports, or the meaning of it, that the devotee understands. This is, so, behind compassion, they say the fuel, the rocket fuel for transcendental compassion is this understanding that real happiness is with the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, and without which there is no real happiness. So these other processes I'm rejecting because they don't bring real happiness. They may counteract suffering. They may counteract tendency for further sinful activity or further foolish activity. But they in themselves are limiting to that individual. And even then, the real happiness of the soul is not experienced at its shelter at the Lord's lotus feet. And therefore, I reject these other processes. Very focused. Devotional service is unmixed with motive and other forms of liberating activity. On the other hand, if pure devotion is in the primary place, then these other forms of liberating activities can be accepted, because they'll be connected to satisfying the personality of Godhead as serving his parts and parcels. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to shelter at your lotus feet. These are the verses and the purports, both are very, very, very inspirational. For me, I mean, they're just very wonderful. Compassion, transcendental compassion of Prahlad. Supported by a perfectly clear picture of material energy, material activity, the soul, the binding of the soul, the liberating of the soul, the Supreme Lord, his relationship to the whole business. It's very, very wonderful. It's unmixed devotion. In the end of the previous chapter is these various devatas and Kim Purushas and Kinneras and so on. They're all offering their prayers. So they're exalted, but their devotion doesn't compare to that of Prahlad's. He's in the unmotivated position, unmixed position, innocent, compassionate, fearless, transcendental knowledge, unmixed, gentle, completely humble, completely caring for his father and the fools and rascals and everyone, although clearly recognizing their position. He has nothing but feelings of love for them, although recognizing the foolishness of their position. As soon as the Sangha and the Marco left the classroom, immediately he's a leader, he gets in the front of the class, and he controls the whole class, but he wants to give them transcendental life. Just a little boy, but that's just, he's impelled to do that. Completely respectful to this, and attached to his spiritual master. Detached completely from anything material. Art. The intelligence of Prahlad Maharaj, Mahabhagavata. Wonderful chapter, wonderful section of the Bhagavata. So, any questions or discussion? Yeah. Lamentation and self-pity. Okay.
I can't seem to take a positive step to come out. What specific is
It's how to overcome the lamentation and self-pity, but you're also saying something about prayers that are without feeling. So, this part two, or is that's part of the first? It is the first one in another form of it. Okay. Several things. Something that depends on how strong your intelligence is. But one who has a strong intelligence can do the following. With knowledge comes detachment. So with knowledge, you can understand, you can step aside from the controlled emotion that the lamentation and self-pity that you're feeling, and recognize this is the mode of ignorance. So you become the observer of an event of the material energy, which may have some control over you, but by taking the position of knowledge, by taking shelter in the boat of knowledge, it distances you, it insulates and isolates you from that mode of material nature. So you can step out of the experience, at least to some degree, by stroking your chin and realizing, this is the mode of ignorance, lamentation and illusion and self-pity. That's what the mode of ignorance is made up of. So I don't have to stay influenced by the mode of ignorance. In fact, I can choose to associate with another mode of nature instead of that one. I'd rather do that. And I'm instructed in Bhagavad Gita to do that. So let me take up another kind of association instead. And so I can try for goodness. So instead of the mode of ignorance, where I'm morose and stuck in this mood of anxiety and self-pity, let me take shelter of the mode of goodness that says, I should purify my existence. Okay, I'm still to some degree affected by this anxiety and stress and self-pity and all that, but that's not going to help me. What will help me is if I purify my existence. So let me take up that mood. And with that mood, a certain activity that will help purify my existence. And it can be anything that's doable. Clean your room. Or take a bath. Do something that will that's of the quality of goodness. Do something that will help another person. Go find somebody and help them. Go find somebody and say something that's kind. Just anything. Just simple enough to break that hold that the mode of ignorance has on you. Go wash the dishes. Or something transcendental.
In it,
like we're hearing Prabhupada say, please give me your protection. I'm low. I'm influenced by the mode of ignorance. I don't have good qualification. I don't have good training. I'm stuck. You're on the other side of this river of material existence, and I'm over here, and I'm trying to be your devotee. I'm dependent upon you. Please pick me up. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Call out loudly. There may very well be constraints. Your roommates may think you've gone mad or something. Go for a walk and do that. Neighbors may think I've gone mad. But you know, the idea I'm offering you is it's like sleep. You know, just ignorance is, sleep is also ignorance. So don't linger half awake, half sleep. Get up. Shake off the sleep and get into another mode. At least the mode of passion. You know, do something. But better, because passion will also be followed by lamentation. So mode of goodness, or transcend, just change position rather than half lying, half awake, half asleep. I know that I'm not sleeping. I'm not resting well, but I'm just lying here half awake and half asleep. So the position is similar. I know that I'm suffering of this stress attack, anxiety attack, self-pity attack. I'm awake enough to know that, but I'm covered enough to not be under that influence. So get out of bed. No, get out of it. Just leave it. And to leave it is to take another activity. But this takes an intelligence that's a little strong. I know that that's that, and this is this, and I'm going for this. I'm choosing to associate with the quality of goodness, or choosing to associate with Krishna in the form of devotional service. That's one thing. Second thing is association. Just go to a devotee and say, here's a shoe, hit me on the side of the head, would you? Because I'm in one of these moods again. And I know you're very compassionate, you've done this for me before, you understand the routine I'm going through, and you know that you've got the license to use the shoe, so go ahead. Help me. In your association, in devotee association, I won't be subjected to this. It's completely needless. I know it, but it's got a grip on me right now, and I can't shake it, so please help me. And then a third is knowing that there is some tendency like that. Try to mold your life in such a way that goodness predominates, and gradually the balance of the scale will tip in the favor of goodness and relieve you of that tendency. And one of the things that really helps with goodness is regulation. And then with that regulation, then punctuality. And cleanliness. And truthfulness. Just like you're doing right now. What you're doing right now, that's truthful. In one sense, you're now exposed that the others know that there's this tendency. But likely the others may very well have known there's that tendency anyways without your making a public disclosure. but you're being honest. That's the quality of goodness. The persons that can't be honest stay stuck in that lamentation and the mode influence, hoping that no one will notice that I'm in the modes. But if someone's in the mode, you know it, whether they disclose it or not. So be honest as a principle of life. So the third point is, in general, cultivate the quality of goodness, which will make a balance against the influence of ignorance tendency. And as the Bhagavatam says, this literature, the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, is meant as a revolution against ignorance. So regularly absorb yourself in reading or hearing such transcendental messages, which will be the transcendental counterbalance, framed within a life that is of the quality of goodness. So there's three things. Something immediate. Something curative, that is association, and something, a long-term cure. And I assure you the following, that through the cultivation of devotional service, that tendency will diminish for sure. And as devotional service becomes stronger, it will be gone. Janata agha viplava agham dunbanti karchanyena. It's a reaction to experiencing the mode of ignorance in various ways as a reaction to ignorant activities previously performed. Associating with the mode of ignorance previously brings one an implication with the mode of ignorance. Committing a crime implicates one reactions to that crime. So this is but a reaction. It's another way of distancing you from that. Something has been done in the past that's brought this condition. So you have to pay for that wrong by this suffering. But you can neutralize the suffering by remembrance of Krishna. And making the practical, the first stage, some practical recommendations is doing those things. Leave that position and take another position, take the position of goodness or transcendence. We're assisted or allowed to do that through association or through instructions Krishna has given in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna has made some disclosures in Bhagavad Gita about the modes of nature and how they bind the living entity. And that living entity can choose sangat sanjayate kama according to the association that we keep. This is one of the long-term things. Keep that association which is elevating and you'll become elevated. For certain. Immediate thing of this returning to prayer, because I have a sense that that will help. Takes audible prayer, that means chanting Krishna's name loudly. That's also prayer. that it'll break through the mental doldrums loudly enough that others may become disturbed, but loudly. Especially in those times when the mode of ignorance effect is there. Like Krishna says to Arjuna, stand up and fight. Or in the explanation in Bhishma Dev in chapter 9, where suggestions are being made by Bhishma Dev how to counteract different things, how to counteract sleep is to rise up. Although I've seen persons fall asleep standing up. It was happening on Sunday morning after the Saturday feast at IIT. There were a couple of devotees that during Tulsi Puja they were tottering, standing, their eyes closed. But generally, you're feeling a little sleepy and stand up. So from that, just the idea is, you know, visually, visual images, from that condition, rise up. Don't stay like in bed half asleep. Rise up. Leave that condition and come to an active condition. Alert condition. Shelter in Krishna and, you know, sound vibration will, you have to, it's an activity that you do and it's something that by hearing it, it will keep you alert and attentive. It's the rise up to Krishna position. You'll see, try it, and it works. Especially if it's done in a mood of prayer. Please pick me up. Please engage me. Please connect me in your devotional service. Please connect me with your internal potency, which is certainly stronger than tamaguna. Yes.
Why do devotees generally talk about such pastimes of the Lord, such as creation, which does not seem to be very distinguished from me?
It seems that what?
Sometimes the devotees in the Bhagavad Gita talks about some of the pastimes of the Lord, like creation.
Yeah.
Which does not involve
loving exchanges. The understanding that I have is a kind of a self-evident understanding, that is, that which has such a strong hold on us now, we need to understand that clearly in relation to the Supreme Lord. Factually and clearly. So that we can perform our activities here properly, with proper understanding. And of what it is, how it operates, and particularly in relation to the Supreme Lord. It gives us the background for it. Gives us the tools with which we can work in this world properly. With detachment, with respect for the Lord's proprietorship, with the respect for the Lord's super intelligent arrangement, it gives us detachment from it and attachment to the Supreme. Another thing that it does is that it dismisses all kinds of speculative theories that arise out of an atheistic point of view, that were spoon-fed. Put it the other way, why is it that modern education spoon-feeds us in atheistic theories? Well, one thing is there's a natural curiosity that people have. How did this whole thing begin? Is there a plan to it? Or so that may not be explicitly taught in science class. The reason that we're teaching this is that everybody has this as a natural question. But since we are spoon-fed all that stuff, where God is out of the picture, it's necessary to take an antidote from having taken all of that poison. God is in the picture. In fact, there is no picture without God. And to hear it repeatedly is necessary because we've been repeatedly and repeatedly hearing it. The atheistic point of view. I mean, it's one of the things that really sets me off. I start getting really peeved at the fact that there's compulsory education that's at the core atheistic. And every single child is born has to take big spoonfuls, mandated by law. Compulsory education, take this poison. And that stinks. It's completely unfair, unjust, and cruel. Mandated by the taxpayers' money and the government. I mean, I get upset about that. So something has to be done to give another picture. What's what? How does it exist? What is its purpose? Is there a designer? What is the design? What's the relationship? I mean, it's fundamental. But, you know, behind the whole thing is the Supreme Lord, who is compassionate, and the whole act of creation is an act of compassion because of the desire of the living entity for independent enjoyment. It's not just some cruel act of a nasty God who, you know, go and suffer, go suffer. I'll create this whole thing that brings you so much suffering, go ahead. It's not capricious like that. To ask your question in a different way, one might ask, I've thought of this from time to time, Dhrutakarma, very, very nice devotee, spent years developing this forbidden archaeology book, you know, that thick. Now, one might ask, why did he do that? It's dry, like sawdust. Chewing cardboard or something. Who would go and chew cardboard? Yuck. But he travels around and talks about it. He publishes the book in other languages and the whole thing. And he's a very, very bright person. Extremely bright person. Why did he do that? But it's the same reason. Because it's dry science, but it's in language. It will compel people to accept that the idea of evolutionary theory is rubbish. And people that are, how many archaeologists have there been since the field of archaeology became a thing to do and you could earn a livelihood from it, that have, this view of life? was looking at a National Geographic magazine, and they were describing the whole idea of continental drift as fact. I was shocked. Now, the whole detail of, you know, how India previously was somewhere down the South Pacific and moved all the way up there and kind of crunched in with the continent of Asia, and that's why there's the Himalaya Mountains, because that's where it crunched and just... Oh, come on. But stating it just like la-di-da-di-da. Rubbish. So, to just say rubbish, he's taken the time. Rubbish. That Darwinian evolutionary theory says the continent that through time archaeological findings will prove that this is true. Well, archaeological findings after some time show it's not true. And what kind of cheating business goes on and skullduggery goes on to hide the evidence? The emperor has no clothes. You know the story? That's what he's doing. That's what the scriptures are doing. Well, it's not, that's just not in as an antidote. They're not doing it only as an antidote, as an antidote against. But certainly Vyasadeva knew the other theories, which are all atheistic. So then you have to have a teaching that includes that. It's one of the 10 topics of a Mahapurana. Two of them are dealing with Sarga and Visarga, the creation of the Supreme Lord and the sub-creation of Lord Brahma. How did it all come into being in relation to the Lord? It's a fundamental topic. And Prahlad is doing it in such a way there's actually some rasa in it. There's some taste. Because he's seeing it as a compassionate act. And as I said, that it's a philosophical justification or legitimizing of devotional service, engaging ourselves with the material energy. Which conditioned souls are going to do. But if they can do it in such a way that they can realize the connectedness of those things with the Supreme, or the presence of the Supreme within those things, there's some hope. It's not just, you know, a trick to say it's okay when it's really not okay. It's actually really okay. Although we don't have the realization to match the philosophy. The philosophy is there, and as our purity comes about, our realizations will also come about. It's 20 minutes tonight. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.